This is the Healthy Living Podcast on OWL Radio, a community service of the Low Vision Resource Center. OWL Radio broadcasts to homes in San Antonio, the Hill Country, San Antonio Methodist Hospitals, and via online streaming and smartphone access. You can also ask your Alexa device to enable and play OWL Radio. Welcome, I am Martha Attee. For today's program, I have three articles on supplements and vitamins. And if there is time, I also have a potpourri of topics to cover for you. Be Careful Which Supplements You Take, by Eric Vance from the New York Times. I recently wrote a quiz that asks, how useful are supplements? According to the Food and Drug Administration, the answer seems to be not very. Here are some takeaways from the latest health initiative. In late May, the FDA published Supplement Your Knowledge, an education initiative which lays out the pros and cons of supplements and how they are monitored. They point out that dietary supplements fall under the category of food, not medication, and stress that any substance claiming to treat, diagnose, prevent, mitigate, or cure a disease is a drug, not a supplement. The FDA does not keep lists of dietary supplement products and often is unaware when new ones come out on the market. Companies are expected to police their own products and report any problems to the FDA. Some supplements can also interact with medications. So says the FDA, for instance, ginkgo biloba and vitamin E can thin the blood and cause internal bleeding or stroke. St. John's wort can affect medications for heart disease, cancer, HIV, depression, seizures, and birth control. Some antioxidants can reduce effectiveness of cancer therapy. If you have an adverse reaction to a supplement, such as itching, loss of appetite, abdominal pain, blood in the urine, shortness of breath, or cognitive changes, report it to the FDA immediately. To report, you can go to safetyreporting.hhs.gov. That's safetyreporting.hhs.gov, and you will get a safety reporting portal that you can fill out. As far as getting vitamins, in most cases, a healthy diet, a diet with plenty of fruits and vegetables, meats and other proteins, regular cancer screenings, and exercise will far outperform supplements. If you're curious about taking a supplement, you should talk to your doctor first. If you want more information about understanding dietary supplements, you can go to the FDA.gov and look under Dietary Supplements. The next article is from the Ask Well section of the New York Times, and it was written November 30th, 2018, and it is, what are the effects of vitamin B12 deficiency? This is written by Ronnie Karen Rabin. It's a question and answer form. First question, what are the effects of vitamin B12 deficiency if left untreated? A deficiency of vitamin B12 can cause neurological and psychiatric problems that can progress if left untreated and can lead to irreversible damage. This according to Donald Hensrud, director of the Mayo Clinic's Healthy Living Program. Fortunately, it can be reversed fairly easily with vitamin pills or injections. Vitamin B12 is required for proper red blood cell formation, nerve function, and DNA synthesis. It is naturally present in fish, meat, eggs, and dairy products, as well as some fortified breakfast cereals and nutritional yeast products. Strict vegans who avoid animal products can develop a deficiency of B12 over time if they don't take a supplement. But 2/3 of the cases occur in the elderly, who are susceptible because they may not absorb adequate amounts of B12 from foods, but who are not routinely tested. Consequences of B12 deficiency can cause a range of symptoms that include fatigue, weakness, constipation, loss of appetite, and weight loss. Other symptoms include difficulty maintaining balance, depression, confusion, dementia, poor memory, and soreness in the mouth or tongue. B12 deficiency may also result in a form of anemia called megaloblastic anemia, which can also result from a deficiency of folic acid, another B vitamin. If anemia is detected on blood tests, levels of both vitamins should be checked. Neurological symptoms can, however, occur in the absence of anemia. Early treatment is critical to avoid potentially irreversible damage. Older adults are susceptible to B12 deficiency because they may have decreased secretion of hydrochloric acid in the stomach, which makes it difficult to absorb the vitamin B12. Also vulnerable to B12 deficiency are those with gastrointestinal disorders like celiac disease or Crohn's disease. Those who have had weight loss or other gastrointestinal surgery, and those who use certain acid reflux drugs or the diabetes drug metformin. Individuals with pernicious anemia, which affects up to 2% of older adults, are also susceptible. Again, that article was from the Well blog section in their department, Ask Well, and that was from December 4th, 2018. The next article is from the Scam or Not section of the New York Times. It's titled, Can Supplements Really Help with Depression or Anxiety? This article was written by Annie Sneed, and it is from June 13, 2022. St. John's wort, quote, promotes a positive mood. Valerian root reduces, quote, levels of anxiety and stress. Lavender oil is, quote, calming for mind and body. If you are among the tens of millions of people in the United States who suffer from depression or anxiety, it is easy to be captivated by the promise of mood-boosting supplements. Take these pills daily, their marketing suggests, and soon you'll be happily bouncing through verdant, sun-soaked fields with no prescription required. But while experts say that some mood-lifting supplements are better studied than others, the wider evidence on their effectiveness is shaky at best. Dr. Gerard Sanacora, director of the Yale Depression Research Program, stated, "I'm not saying that there's evidence that these things aren't useful. It's more that the quality of the evidence isn't to the level that we can really have much confidence in. And when compared to other treatments, such as traditional medicines, psychotherapy, the experts said, supplements fall short. Here is what we know about some of the most common supplements that are marketed for mental health. Supplements for depression. St. John's wort, omega-3 fatty acids, L-methylfolate, S-adenosylmethionine, also known by the initials SAME, and N-acetylcytosine, also known as NAC, are among the most common supplements used to treat symptoms of depression. But some have more research behind them than others. St. John's wort. This flowering plant is among the best-studied supplements as a treatment for depression, but not all studies suggest benefits. Dr. Sanacora said, quote, "There's actually been a fair amount of work done on St. John's wort over the years, but it is still not the high-quality evidence that you would see for a Food and Drug Administration-approved drug." A 2016 review of 35 studies that included about 7,000 people, for example, found that St. John's wort was better than a placebo in helping people with mild to moderate depression. A 2008 review had similar findings. However, two carefully conducted studies published in 2001 and 2002 found no evidence of a benefit. Because of this, health experts, including the National Institutes of Health, advise people not to use St. John's wort in place of conventional care. Experts also advise caution when taking it because of the potential for adverse interactions with other drugs. Omega-3 fatty acids. Supplements for these essential fats have some, but limited, evidence indicating they help with mild to moderate depression. To date, the data provides a suggestion that the treatment may have small to modest benefits, but this is far from a definitive finding. Dr. Sanacora also added, "I would not call the evidence high quality for these studies." A 2015 analysis of more than two dozen studies, for instance, concluded that even if omega-3 supplements did help with depression, the benefit might not be large enough to be meaningful. Dr. Dan Iosifescu, an associate professor of psychiatry at New York University Grossman School of Medicine, agreed. He said, "It's very mixed data, and some studies don't really see that much benefit. The data are somewhat controversial." The next supplement, L-methylfolate. This metabolically active form of folate, an essential B vitamin, has some evidence to support its use for depression. Dr. Sanacora said the overall data is conflicting and does not reach the quality of evidence underpinning FDA-approved medications. And it may be helpful only to specific people, particularly those who have trouble metabolizing or using folate correctly in their body. Dr. Sanacora also noted that the existing evidence was mostly for L-methylfolate taken in combination with standard antidepressants, not as a supplement taken on its own. So people should not count on taking the supplement alone for treatment. Everything else. Evidence for benefits from other supplements in treating depression drops off quickly, Dr. Sanacora said. He and the other experts said that there had been studies on SAME and NAC supplements, but there's really not strong data to support their use. And even for the best ones, the data is questionable. And now for supplements for anxiety. The main supplements used for anxiety, including lavender, kava, and valerian root, have even less evidence than those for depression, and they lack strong, high-quality research, at least as far as the experts knew. Quote, "That does not mean they are not effective," said Dr. Sanacora. There just hasn't been the rigorous research that is done typically for drugs applying for FDA indications. Dr. Iosifescu did say he thinks that kava has moderate evidence of benefit. However, he cautioned that kava could have a rare but serious risk of liver toxicity. Is there any harm in trying them? Some might think that taking a supplement for their depression or anxiety could not hurt, so why not try? But the experts cautioned that there could be potential risks and downsides. Supplements can be expensive and may cause side effects or adverse drug interactions. And supplements are not as rigorously regulated as FDA-approved drugs and over-the-counter medications are, and they do not have to be proved safe and effective before they can be sold. Quote, "There's not nearly as much oversight compared to traditional pharmaceuticals, which requires pills to be manufactured in a consistent way with consistent dosing," said Dr. Paul Nezdat, a co-director of the Johns Hopkins Anxiety Disorders Clinic and assistant professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Johns Hopkins Medicine. Megan Olson, the general counsel for the Council of Responsible Nutrition, a trade association for the supplement industry, wrote in a statement to the New York Times that supplement companies were allowed to make health-related claims about the product's, quote, "effect on the structure or function of the body," unquote, and that those claims must be supported by evidence. But Dr. Peter Cohen, an associate professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, said that supplement companies were rarely held accountable for certain health claims associated with their products. As long as the manufacturer does not claim that their product will treat or cure a specific disease, they can say anything they want to, he said. Another potential risk of supplements is a paradoxical one. They could exacerbate a mental health condition. Dr. Nezdat said that there's some evidence, for instance, that St. John's wort can potentially induce a manic episode in people with bipolar disorder. Perhaps one of the biggest dangers is that people may take a supplement instead of seeking a proven treatment for their anxiety or depression. Dr. Sanacora said, quote, "I'm not so worried that someone is going to try lavender or chamomile. I'm much more worried about the risks associated with delaying an effective treatment." If your depression or anxiety is severe, experts say supplements are unlikely to help, and you should instead see a trained professional. In fact, experts recommend that you consult a healthcare provider before starting any supplement, regardless of what it is meant to treat. What treatments are actually proven to work? Traditional medications and psychotherapy, including antidepressants and cognitive behavioral therapy, have the highest quality evidence of benefit for anxiety and depression, so say the experts. They also mentioned treatments like transcranial magnetic stimulation, which is a non-invasive technique that stimulates a certain area of the brain with magnetic pulses. The FDA has approved that treatment for depression and obsessive-compulsive disorder. Exercise can also be beneficial, the experts say. While it does not have as much high-quality evidence as the other approaches, Dr. Sanacora said there was still very good data on its effectiveness for mild to moderate anxiety and depression. And he added, unlike supplements, exercise is free. It's always a balance between what's practical and sustainable versus what the evidence is. And the author, Annie Sneed, is a science journalist who has written for the Scientific American, Wired, and Public Radio International and Fast Company. If you are having thoughts of suicide, call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. That is 1-800-273-TALK. And changing the subject to sleep, another article from Ask Well, and the question is, why is my sleep so messed up in the summer? Though seasonal shifts can derail your sleep, there are things you can do to snooze more soundly when it's hot outside. While there isn't much research on this particular phenomenon, there is some evidence that seasonal changes can impact sleep patterns, and there are several issues that could cause you to lose sleep in the summer. Daylight saving time. The most probable culprit is the extra sunlight exposure we tend to get in the evenings during the summer versus the winter, especially for those who live in the northern latitudes. This is because light suppresses the body's production of melatonin, a hormone that plays a role in signaling to the body that it's time to sleep. So if you're still soaking up sun late into the evening, or even under artificial lighting, rather than relaxing in a dimly lit environment, melatonin won't be released, and you'll likely have a harder time falling asleep at your regular time. And then there's warmer weather. Higher temperatures during the summer can also wreak havoc on sleep. Under ideal conditions, your body temperature starts to fall by a couple of degrees about 1 to 2 hours before bedtime, and it continues to decline while sleeping, said Leslie Swanson, who is a clinical psychologist and associate professor of psychiatry in the Sleep and Circadian Research Laboratory at the University of Michigan. This internal cooling effect helps us achieve the deep, restorative stage of sleep known as slow wave sleep. But when the ambient temperature is high outside, it prevents our body temperature from falling as quickly to where we want it to be in order to facilitate sleep. This not only makes it harder to fall asleep, but it also can cause frequent awakenings during the night. A summer social life. Beyond light and temperature, it's also useful to look at your lifestyle during the summer, which may be quite different from your habits throughout the rest of the year. Summer is a time when many of us ease into vacation mode, which can translate into more socializing, drinking, and eating late at night. All of these activities too close to bedtime will delay your body's internal circadian clock and make it hard for you to get the shut-eye you need. How to sleep more soundly during the summer. The good news is that you're not powerless against the plight of summer insomnia. Here's some ways to combat this problem. Stick to a consistent sleep routine. Going to bed and waking up at the same time every day, even on the weekends, no matter how tired you may feel in the morning, will help your circadian clock adjust to your desired bedtime. Let the sun shine in. During the mornings and throughout the day, open your curtains and go outside as much as possible. Daytime sunlight cues your body that it is time to be alert and strengthens the circadian clock, which in turn promotes better sleep at night, said Philip Gurman, a clinical psychologist and associate professor at the Penn Sleep Center at the University of Pennsylvania. Set the mood. 1 or 2 hours before bedtime, make a point to dim the lights, which will trigger your body's natural production of melatonin. Don't forget to shut off electronic devices at that time too, because they may emit blue light. If you do need to use a screen at night, Dr. Swanson suggests dimming your device to the lowest possible setting and shifting your screen to night shift mode if it's available. If you can't dim the screen on your device or the overhead lights, It is recommended wearing blue light blocking glasses. They're also sometimes called amber glasses. While there is some debate about their efficacy, there is research suggesting that they can reduce insomnia. Then, with the lights low, do something quiet and relaxing to transition into your sleep mode. We're not built to go from 60 miles an hour to zero. We need time to slow down, or else it will be hard for us to sleep, Dr. Swanson said. That's why the experts say that you should avoid aerobic exercise close to bedtime. They also advise against eating large meals within 3 hours of sleep, though a small snack before bedtime is fine. And when it comes to drinking, experts recommend not consuming alcohol in the hours leading up to bedtime because even though it will probably cause you to conk out quickly, it will likely lead to a fitful night of poor quality sleep. Pay attention to caffeine. The general rule of thumb is to be cautious of caffeine after lunchtime, said Dr. Gurman. Caffeine can linger in the brain for 8 to 10 hours at sufficient enough levels to disrupt sleep. But he added that the effects of caffeine can vary greatly from person to person. Cool down your bedroom. When it's time to sleep, keep your bedroom between 60 and 67 degrees. We tend to get more deep sleep in a cool bedroom. Dr. Gurman said he even noted that for some people, once summer hits, they crank up the air conditioning, they sleep better because they're keeping their bedroom cooler than they would in spring or fall. Avoiding distractions. If you can, use room darkening shades or an eye mask while sleeping, and consider turning on a white noise machine or a fan that hums gently to buffer any distracting environmental sounds. If you still find you're tossing and turning in bed, get up and do something calming, like reading a book, meditating, or knitting, until you feel sleepy. Only then you get back into bed. That way you won't associate your bed with sleeplessness. Dr. Gurman says, we always say that the bed should be used for only two things, sleep and sex. If some of these things are out of your control, don't worry. Most people don't have to follow every one of these suggestions to get a good night's sleep. Still, if none of these strategies help, and your nighttime insomnia starts to interfere with your daytime functioning, you should seek out a sleep specialist. The author, Rachel Rabkin Peachman, is a journalist specializing in health, science, and family. And that was the last article for today's program. You have been listening to the Healthy Living Podcast on OWL Radio. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call 210-829-4223. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Martha Atiyi. Thank you for listening, and goodbye from OWL Radio.